SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
We're back. Hour two, and just picking through a few more of the weekend gems, and KC efforting our man Johnny. Looking forward to talking to John White in hour three, actually, and you know, I know that it's small. It's a small consolation. The Basilica's win in the Buena Vista on Saturday, you know, after the barn had, you know, suffered the Battle of Midway loss, and at the same time, I mean, the Basilica story just continues to amaze. And then yesterday, I. Always happy when Gary Sherlock does well, and show it and mow it in a good one. Wins that spring fever. So we'll talk to John and get some other, see if there's anything during the week that we missed. I know there's some maidens as well. And there's a nice, even in advance of the excitement toward the San Felipe, you've got a big showdown on Friday at Santa Anita. Nolo Contesto, who, of course, unfortunately, you know, ended up scratching out of the San Vicente with the wet track. Nice that we're going to get him. And I'm just reaching for the where did I tell you. There's just too much on the desk, but here it is. Here we go. The first. We'll start things out, and gonna look forward to. I don't even know what race it was. The eighth. It's the eighth. It's the feature. There you go. In addition to Nolo Contesto. Not the only, and he drew the rail for this mile opportunity. Roadster returns in this spot as well. Not seen since his solid third behind stablemate Game Winner in the Del Mar Futurity. So Roadster back in here, the quality road for Speedway, 525. And Baffert is bringing Desmond back in this spot as well for his two-turn debut, and obviously the upset in the San Vicente at the hands of Sparkyville with Jeff Bondi, but bringing him back on Friday, which is a little different for Baffert, and I imagine that this is this is an audition for. I mean, if he's going to run on March 1st, I mean, the Rebels, the 16th, it seems like that would be a bit of a quick turn. I suppose this could be a Sunland Derby path for Desmond. Maybe that's what the so when we talked to Baffert and last week we didn't on Monday we didn't get a. We didn't get a chance to talk to Baffert about Marley's Freedom's performance either. That was certainly was a nice win in the Santa Monica. So, in fact, it was a good. You know, mentioning that it was a good weekend for Blame, right? Because didn't Blame win the Royal Delta as well last Saturday? Yeah, and Marley's Freedom won the Santa Monica. So. Pair of graded stake wins for Blame, who's chugging along. as a stallion. I was exchanging some notes. I wanted to get further clarification from Butch and Ginny Reed about Maximus Mischief. And yesterday, I know Mike Welch had let it be known that he was going to be sidelined, and there isn't much of a change. It's a soft tissue injury, basically, and they're going to give him time, and they're going to aim for the Pennsylvania Derby. So the Maximus Mischief train is going to pause at the station for a while, and feel badly for Butchie and for Ginny, who do a great job. And that's one thing when you have a barn full, and you've got a bunch of candidates, but when you've got one, big horse on the 3-year-old stomp, it's frustrating. So we'll look for Maximus Mischief in the second half. Here's Johnny D joining us.
Stevie.
Hey.
Technical difficulties this morning.
Yeah, where were you? I thought maybe you might. I thought at first when Casey said he was having trouble nailing you down, I thought maybe you were on the road, and because sometimes the trips to out to Western Pennsylvania.
No, for some reason, it's very windy here. Extremely windy.
Oh, here too, crazy.
Yeah, so maybe something's blown out somewhere because my cell phone, Casey couldn't get through to me. I tried to call him. I couldn't get through to him. I had to look up my landline number because I don't even know what it is.
That's great.
And I don't answer it. I mean, whenever it rings, I know it's no one has it, so I know it's a marketing.
Exactly.
I never give it to anyone, and no one has it. Nobody's calling me on this phone. So I said, oh, let me try that.
That's great. That's great.
So we went back to the future.
Exactly right. Exactly.
Which
it's
is
good
nice
to connect.
Nice to know this is here because,
yes.
I mean, you never know. But, man, I think with the cable service I have, I think there's a better chance of the cable going out, taking my phone with it, rather than the cell phone. But not the case today.
Well, yeah, we had. It's funny. I was due to get a new phone myself, and then I dropped it in New Orleans, and I had never cracked a screen, and I dropped it on Canal Street, and there went the screen. My first experience with the shattered, I limped along for a few days, but when Tina got to in New Orleans, she said, oh, we're getting you a new, she's been pushing me to get a new phone anyway, and usually she takes my upgrades, but I ended up in Mobile, actually. I got a new phone in Mobile, and the funny thing about this is the phone that it replaced, I ended up getting that one in Tucson at the symposium 3 years ago or more, maybe even 4 years ago, because the phone, I either lost it or had it picked up and stolen. So I find it curious that my last two phones have come in far-flung, have been acquired in far-flung locales, Mobile and Tucson.
That's crazy. As it said, the road is hell.
Well.
I know you had a great time. It sounds like
really
a fantastic trip. Yeah,
we really did.
And, what you were just telling me reminds me of maybe it could be the roots of a great country western song. I got my phone in Mobile.
Yes.
I'm going to write that one tonight.
All right. And we'll find a good country western key to What do they say in Blues Brothers? C, that's a good country key, or whatever the line is that's Steve Cropper.
Did you enjoy the Oscars?
No, I didn't. I didn't. We watched more of the pregame, more of the hullabaloo over the outfits than we did the actual show. I mean, it's every year. It's the same thing. They give out one award that people are interested in, and then you got a bunch of awards that are technical awards, and you lose interest and you fall asleep.
Yeah. That's it. I'll tell you what was interesting. I thought, I don't know how other people felt, but didn't mind not having a host.
Yeah, that worked. That seemed to work.
Yeah, yeah. Isn't it funny how things happen and then you realize something that you would have never kind of thought of that on your own. You'd have never said, hey, I got an idea. Let's have this award show without a host. They would have laughed you out of the room, out of the meeting room. But to be kind of halfway forced into considering it, it was okay. It was not bad. Now, I do remember the days of when we had those classic hosts like Bob Hope,
right?
But that was something different. We're in a different time now. Maybe things need to be different. And the appearance of Tina Fey, Amy Poehler, and Maya Rudolph. You know,
they were funny.
They were good. You know, let's get this thing rolling here, and they did a good job. And
that was the highlight for us.
What's that?
That was the highlight. Regina King winning, and then it went sideways. And then I woke up at 3 o'clock, and I said, "Let me see what happened here." And I looked at it. I saw the results, and I said, oh, I'm really glad we didn't stay up now. Because
at 3 o'clock, you could have caught the tail end of the show.
Well, Casey was just getting back from Ocala, or wherever he went. I got a text from Casey at 3:13.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, and I was looking up.
Every year, I try and see all of the nominated films. And I got the last one in, I think, Sunday morning. I was one behind, and I got it in. And it was not a great year, I don't think. I don't think it was a great year.
Well, we actually, it's funny you say that, because Tina and I, we got back early, actually. We got back to Albany at 1 o'clock. We were home by 2:30 or so, and we were sitting, and she said, "Do you want to watch Black Klansman?" And we hadn't seen it. And I said, "Yeah, let's watch it now." We're choosing between that and The Favorite, and we thought, let's get in the mood for this. And I thought Black Klansman was fabulous. And I'm a Spike Lee fan. I know some aren't, but
there just didn't seem to. They were enjoyable movies, but there was nothing. You know, I'm thinking of, you know, I don't want to say years past because you sound like you're an old, you know, but
you are old.
It seemed like there were, yeah, I am, but it seemed like there were better. I guess it's like horses, you know, there are good years and there are not so good years. I don't think there are ever bad years because these are the best of the best. Like you were mentioning earlier about the last year's the 2018 3-year-old crop. How, you know, people were saying, well, Justified didn't beat anyone, and look what they're doing. They haven't come back and done anything. So you can always knock it, but they're never bad. They're just sometimes not as good or as deep as they could be. And I think that was a case this year, for me anyway. Roma, it was a wonderfully crafted film, but not for everyone. You know, it was slow moving, and it was a, you know, heartfelt story that he was telling, and not everyone's going to buy into that. It's funny how certain movies speak. It's funny how movies speak to different people. how someone can absolutely adore a film and somebody else comes out saying, it's funny.
Well, for those that didn't see Jay Hovde's terrific column for yesterday, or Friday, I guess it probably hit. It might have shown up in the printed editions of the Forum yesterday. Jay offered up a racing movie trifecta where he asked all kinds of people, and I responded to as well. If you haven't seen Jay's piece, take a look for it in the Forum. I'll send a link to it. It's really fun, and there's actually some movies, racing movies, that were included in the column that I hadn't even heard of that caught my eye. We're gonna have to try to seek out. So
it's funny. I did the same thing this morning. I didn't see Jay's column, but I saw his tweet where he was pushing Lean on Pete. I think
it's dark. It's tough. It's tough. Tough sledding.
Is it? You've seen it?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. We saw it. It Buscemi's great. The kid is great. But it packs a wallop, to be honest.
Well, you know, sometimes it's, I don't know if it has to do with the game or the sport or what, but whether it's just life itself.
Yeah.
Sometimes this sport packs a wallop, and we got one this weekend.
Yeah, we did. Exactly. It's a good segue.
And, you know, obviously whatever's going on at Santa Anita, there's an issue, and they're addressing it, and this stuff happens I think you kind of alluded to it earlier. It seems like this stuff comes in bunches, and certainly the weather they've had this year is challenging. There's no other way around it. I mean, it's an outdoor activity, and when rain affects the conditions, not just for racing, but for training. It seems that things are more likely to go wrong. And that seems to be the case, but they'll get it figured out. It seems like they've got the best minds working on it. Brought in some people to check the track out. The track is going to be closed, I think. Now, I thought that was interesting, too. They originally announced that the track would be closed Monday and Tuesday for training, closed for training. And then there are some trainers out there that that can't take 2 days in a row off with their, and I would think with their derby horses, I think coming to mind is, I think Instagram was supposed to work this morning. And so I guess calls by Baffert and Hollendorfer, the track's going to stay open Monday, and then they'll begin the research on Tuesday, which is very strange because the trainers must feel, I mean, these are two Hall of Fame trainers, they must feel like I don't want to say it's not a serious problem because it certainly is a serious problem, but that they don't feel there's an imminent danger, or else they would not send out their top horses over the racetrack.
We've discussed this with, whether it's with Dr. Alday on a veterinarian specific and you know, individual discussion, or whether it's with somebody like a Mick Peterson himself, or with Dr. Scalay, who pioneered the equine injury database. And you know, we went through the situation at Aqueduct 6 years ago, 7 years ago, whatever it was. And this era, the tracking and the close examination of injury and fatalities, this is a relatively new call it a science, you know, call it a discipline. But you know, we're only really just getting started in understanding or even tracking these injuries. I remember having this discussion with Chuck Simon, and Chuck, you know, mentioned, you know, he said, you know, people drawing conclusions about, you know, how about how many injuries and how many fatalities when we have no idea. I mean, in terms of a huge stretch, I mean, it's not like we've got decades of information to go back on. So, you know, when, for instance, the Steve Anderson piece that was tracking, you know, part of this, noting that there were 138 fatalities at all racetracks in California in 17-18. And that was down 33% from 206 the year before, 16-17. Well, right now, okay, you've had 18 since the start of the meet at Santa Anita, and six were on dirt, five were on turf, seven that were training injuries and fatalities. So when there's spikes and there's these clusters, okay, is it the race? It could be, yeah, it could be the racetrack, but there's no way in a for those of you that play roulette, and Johnny, you can appreciate this, the chaotic number theory, where you may get, you know, three 18s in eight spins. You get clusters, and if you try to watch this at a moment by moment, you're going to get, your judgment is going to be cloudy. These have to be, I mean, you have to be vigilant and certainly do these examinations, but they could very well, you know, go take the cushion off the entire racetrack, look at the base, not find a single spot on the base that's a problem, put the cushion back on, and have a fatality on Thursday. You do not, there is no possible way to draw immediate conclusions unless there's something specifically wrong that is identified. It has to be taken in a much bigger totality than three horses over the weekend. And I know we're in an era where, you know, we're watching this very closely, and people want to draw conclusions every 24 hours, but you can't do that. It's not reasonable.
Yeah, I think the most important thing is that we're living in an era when people look at this stuff very closely. That's the most important thing.
Yeah, that's
Santa
great
Anita's
progress.
Santa coming off a season which was the best in, I think, 25 years, a quarter of a century, as far as fatalities were concerned. So it's not that much different racetrack. I mean, it's the same location. They didn't do anything to the base. So why is this happening this year? Well, it's clusters. It's the way things happen. But it also, we got to look at it. And that's
sure,
exactly the right thing to do, is to say, hey, let's take a look at it. Del Mar had a similar rash of injuries, and they went over and above to find out what happened and why and what can we do, and become overly cautious, and it paid off in the last couple of years.
Right.
But as you say, yeah, there's not always an A to B to C relationship between what's happening here, and we just hope that that whatever they find, if they find anything, that they can, you know, fix that. You know what? Stormy Liberals race. Now here's one of the, you know, fastest, best turf runners in the country. Off the turn, he bobbled. I mean, he almost went down. I mean, if you watch a replay, for those of you who haven't seen it, watch a replay, and just before they entered a stretch, I don't even have to tell you, if you just watch Stormy Liberal, you'll see it. He almost goes down. Now, he slipped. The footing should have been fine. I think it was a a 5-furlong sprint. You know, was that just a one-off? Did he just? I don't know, and it's hard to tell these things exactly what happened. Sometimes horses just stumble. But it was that was a frightening little moment there. And then there was something else I saw on Twitter that someone had said, well, you know, whenever these fatalities occur, they can't get used to them, or they don't know how they're going to get used to them. Well, I remember when I was much younger, I'm going to say it was 40 years ago, roughly 35 years ago, at Santa Anita. And there was a fatality in the stretch of a race. And after the race, I was walking, you know, the box seat section. I was walking down the row there. And, you know, the upper box is like you're almost eye level with the person sitting in the box and the front row of the box. And as I was passing by trainer Jerry Fanning, I looked at him. I said, you know, I can't get used to that. And he looked me dead in the eye, and this is an old-time, serious horseman. He said, you never will. And that struck me that these guys, and when people say, oh, they don't care about the horses, they don't, that's the more involved you are, the worse it gets, the more you feel for the animals and what happens. So, yeah. Don't be surprised that you're not getting used to it. You're never going to get used to it. And unfortunately, we are never going to eradicate injuries, fatalities. It's just not going to happen. We can do the best we can and better than the best we can, but we're never going to wipe them out. It's an athletic endeavor. And it's funny, I point to my wife when they, you know, I see a guy in the NFL injured severely on a Sunday, and they come out and they put him in the cart and they take him off the field. And I say to her, that guy's career is over. And in some ways, maybe I'm being a little too philosophical here, in some ways, part of his life is over. Now, we can heal athletes. We can't always heal horses. But we can heal athletes. However, when you think of what that athlete has done his entire life, the dedication and the commitment to what he has done for 20-something years and the level of talent that he's achieved, the level of accomplishment also that he's achieved, for and anyone who's competed seriously, probably in, you know, I would say the college level or maybe semi minor leagues or something like that, never really got to the pros, to think of the commitment and what it takes to get there and to have it end like that, you do lose a part of your life. There's no question about it. Jockeys who are forced to retire, not because of debilitating injuries, that's a whole nother story, but who are injured serious enough to where they can't ride anymore or they risk causing even more serious injury, paralyzation. So those guys, it takes adjusting. It takes, you know, but my point is, they wheel guys off the field in the NFL, and we hardly even give it a thought. In most cases, I mean, and the head injuries and this and that, and we hardly even think about it. Now, recently, the head injuries have certainly come to the forefront, but for years, a guy got up and he stumbled around, and you know, we laughed, and not so much now, but. We feel more for the animals, mostly because it's sometimes that injury is fatal. But we do. We feel more for them. and we care more for them. It's a strange dynamic, but it's true. And then people say, well, they don't have a choice. Well, if it wasn't for racing, they would have never been born. Remember that one, too.
Right.
Someone, somewhere, put that horse's sire and dam together to produce a foal and either paid to raise that foal or somebody else. Somebody invested in that horse, but the only reason that horse is here is to compete. So, yes, humans have a choice, but that the other one trumps the choice, I think.
Yeah,
I'm off my soapbox.
No, we've riffed on this before. I mean, it's one of the it's a part of the reality of of what the the sport is and what the industry is. And I know that there's some people just are never going to understand it, and they have no real motivation to try. They just they've got a negative judgment about the animals being used for others' pleasure and profit, and I can understand those that have that perspective, but I don't have to I don't have to agree. I mean, everybody that
Steve, I hate to interrupt you. Can you hear me okay? 'Cause
yeah.
You are cutting in and out severely.
Oh, all right.
For some reason. I don't know what
that happened. That might be your phone, because otherwise Casey would have let me know if there was...
No, now you're good for... That was okay. All good. I heard that. Anyway, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but...
No. It's the part of the, the sport,
yes,
and the industry that's tough to grapple with. And
let's talk about a part that's easy to grapple with. The results of Beat the Host.
Yes.
In this week's Beat the Host, as you said, you mentioned it earlier, our man Eddie Olczyk only had one winner, but it was good enough for over $31, and it was a nice payoff. So, Sweep the Host, we don't have to say candidates because it's over. 44 players sweep the host this year, down from, I believe it was 68. 44 players swept the host, which is really an incredible number. It takes some commitment. It's an eight-week commitment, and it's nice to see folks like Beat the Host enough to come back and keep playing it. And congratulations to all 44, because it does take some dedication. We've got our prize winners for this week. Gerard Pisanelli, $147 for $1,500 prize. Steve Cunahan, $141. $750 was his prize. And John Morrow was third, $139, $250 prize. And got a great email from John Morrow saying he listens to the show, and he lives near you. He lives in Latham.
Oh, nice.
He wanted to thank ExpressBet for putting on a low-entry contest. And he says he enjoys it very much. And his goal was to cash a ticket, and he did it this week by finishing third. So special congratulations to him, and a big thank you to everyone who played Beat the Host this year. It really was an unusual year. Our hosts struggled at times, but that's the way this game goes, and it was supported very well this year. I think people had have settled into really looking forward to this and having fun doing it. And many of our hosts had some fun with it too. I know you spoke about it quite a bit when you were host, and you do every week in general. But our man Quigley Tom Quigley, he threw down the gauntlet his week and then had a rough week. And Jeremy Plonk talked about it. And we have some of our XPTV people like Jeff Siegel. John White certainly is a great representative. It's a bottom line, it's a fun group of hosts. We have fun with it, and we hope that you do too. Those who qualify for the championship, you don't need to do a thing. You will automatically be registered. Just show up and be ready to go. Be ready to pick some winners. And that will be Saturday. And the prizes in there, first prize is $5,000. All the way down, 5th through 10th gets $500 each. And remember, the top 30 players in the championship are going to advance to Express Bet Showdown, and that's got a $20,000 first place prize. So if you did well this season, keep it up for one more week and get yourself in that Beat the Host championship. I mean, get yourself into Showdown and take home a very big prize.
Well, and certainly the races this weekend with the Gulfstream Stakes card, it was certainly going to have some fun, I would imagine.
Yes, and we obviously we don't have a host this weekend because players will be competing against each other, and that's going to be a new challenge. But you know, it's a $5 win wager. It's a live win wager on 8 races and. That's the $40 that you outlay. And if you pick, like, look at Eddie O this week, picked one winner, got back, I think, $31.50. You get to play for, you know, $10,000 in weekly prizes and get into the Beat the Host Championship, and it costs you $8. If you pick a few winners, you might even make money. So.
Absolutely.
I don't know why I'm pushing Beat the Host. It's pretty much over. We've got Express Bet Live coming up on March 16th. We'll talk about that later.
Well, and that'll be Rebel weekend at Oaklawn. Johnny, let me get your take. I'm going to assume you couldn't resist Friday's sequence when it came to the Stronach 5. And as I mentioned, we know Stan hit, and I was delighted for Stan Salter. That was really nice.
Did he have it? Did he actually play it?
I think so, yeah. Good. From what I'm hearing, yeah.
I have a rule, you know, whenever I post any kind of, now I don't do it every day, so it would get a little crazy, but whenever I post something on ExpressBet for the big races, a superfecta, a pick six, whatever, pick four, whatever I post, I buy one of those tickets. Now, I will wager on other stuff in addition to that, but I will buy one of those tickets. A couple reasons. If I'm suggesting that people play this, I certainly should play it myself. And the second reason is, I don't want to hit it and not have it and have
exactly.
to listen to people congratulate
exactly.
me on what I did. And, okay, you know.
Yeah, exactly. How did you fare in this? I mean, I know that apparently, you know, the way Stan approached it, he threw out the 60-1 shot, used all the other six in that first leg, and then must have really tiptoed because the $72 ticket, and he had 6 multiples in the first leg right away. So, you know, that leaves him 12 multiples in 4 races. And, you know, even though, you know, obviously Moe's Ride was the shortest price at 480, you still had to come up with, you know, a couple of 3-to-1s and, you know, 7-to-2 and, you know, the other non-favorites, you had to really cherry pick. And obviously he did. 11,000, I thought, for, you know, 83 tickets, Johnny, that's also a great, that's perfect. And when you get that many people that hit, and the thing really took money, too. I mean, we were all thinking about 4 times the 170,000. It exceeded that, and it got over 1 million.
Yeah, that really is. The carryover is just, what a boost when that happens. and also the low takeout. Has a lot to do with it, too. So very nice payout. And, you know, the way Stan played this thing is not a bad way to play these multi-leg wagers. If you can go, you know, I kind of mentioned this last week. I know there's been people on your show, and I've heard excellent players, excellent gamblers, say that the all button is, you know, you shouldn't use it. But I just think that sometimes if you're playing these, multi-leg wagers, there are some times when you look at a race and you feel like I do not have any, I have no idea. This horse can win. This horse can win. This horse can win. This horse. And you have no feeling for that race. I don't see how it's a bad thing to do. Now, is it going to limit the rest of your ticket? Yes. And you said they had a tiptoe. Stan's toes must have been in great shape because even in these other races, it's tough to come up on such a small ticket with the winners. But, you know, sometimes it has to be your day, too. That's okay to, you know, you get a little lucky in some places. That's okay, too. But if you use the all button or the virtually all button, which Stan did, man, that opens the door up for you, especially if you're playing small tickets and you don't have a feeling. If he were to have a feeling about a 10-to-1 shot in that race, and or if he had two or three horses that he thought could win, yeah, okay, you don't need all. But I'm talking about when you don't have any idea, and obviously Stan had no idea. It gives your ticket such power if you are correct. If you get that 20-to-1 shot, 30-to-1 shot, in this case, 10-to-1 shot, it just gives your ticket so much juice. Now, did you waste bullets? I guess some would say yes, you did by using all the other combinations. But in my mind, I didn't waste them because I'm moving on. And if I would not have used all, I would not be moving on.
Right.
So, yes, your ticket becomes weaker later because you're handcuffed because you spent so much in the one race. But it's my experience that, and I could be wrong, that many times I'll have 4 out of 5, 5 out of 6, and the one race that I missed, I'll go back and look at, and I'll say, ah, you know, I could have had this horse, but he would have been like 7th or 8th on my list. Well, it's a 10-horse field. It's a 12-horse field. You know, you might as well use them. If that can happen, or sometimes you'll look back and you'll say, there's no way I could have this horse. No way I can bet this horse. You know, some horse who's run one time and didn't show anything, and he's dropping in class, and he's got no low-level trainer, low-profile jockey, and, you know, you're not going to use him. But he wins because the race, you look at the race, you don't like the favorite, you don't like the second choice, you don't like the third, or you like everybody. In either case, you don't know anything about that race. Use them all. So I'm glad Stan used that to his advantage. But, yeah, he still had to be very good the rest of the day. And as you said earlier, Stan's a lot of fun. So it's nice to see him win.
What did you do in here? How did you approach it?
I didn't win.
I get that.
I tried to. I used 3 in that first leg, and I jumbled around. I had 3 out of 5. I can't remember who else I missed. I think I missed Dr. Edgar, believe it or not. Is that who I missed? I can't really remember. I didn't miss Moe's Ride. Princess Run It. No, you know what? The rest of them I had. They were, the rest of them were, but I didn't build my ticket like Stan did. And I missed the first winner.
And how many did you use in the first?
3.
Huh.
3. Okay. That much I know.
So you'd have to, it would have doubled your ticket.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm in a spot right now where as a
player, it's funny how you go through these cycles. I'm in a spot right now where I don't have any confidence. And I haven't hit a nice payoff in a while, and I kind of chase those payoffs, so that's to be expected. I mean, I play pick sixes, I play pick fives. I'm chasing low frequency wagers, so you're going to have long dry spells. But that eats away at your confidence, unbelievably eats away at your confidence. You get 4 out of 5, you get 5 out of 6, and you're, I'm all. And the payoffs sometimes come back, well, I'm going to say most of the time in these wagers come back, you know, pretty hefty. So it drives you a little nuts. And you have to kind of really keep grabbing yourself and keep saying, stick with it. You know, you've done it before, you'll do it again. It only takes one. But in the meantime, the other,
right.
The
right.
guy with the little horns is saying, you're an idiot, you're throwing your money away, you shouldn't be playing these high takeout wagers, what's wrong with you? You used to go to track with $50 and play all day. Well, that was back in the Stone Ages before we only had a, in California, you only had exactas on 3 races back then. So it's changed quite a bit. But I'm on a tough road here right now.
That's the little devil, and then then the little angel pops up on the other end and says, Lawrence, if you touch one hair on that girl's head, you'll hate yourself the rest of your life. I'm proud of you, Johnny. We're proud of all the beat the host winners, and this might be the shifting point. In the history of Beat the Host.
This is a cycle, and this too shall pass. Next year. The hosts are going to squash them all.
All right. Well, squash like bugs. All right. We'll see.
Stevie, welcome back.
Thank you.
I'm sure you feel it feels good to be home, even though you had a wonderful road trip, West Coast swing. You're leaving soon, too, I think.
I am. I'm going to turn right around next week, and we'll be in Tampa for a few days, and then we'll be at the HBPA convention in Clearwater. And I'm actually now debating.
You're going to get to see a Phillies game?
I very well may do that, and I will say that with the anticipation in the next 24 hours that Bryce Harper will end up in red and white pinstripes. I may be very interested. I do have him on my longstanding fantasy team, so I am toying with becoming a bit of a Phillies fan.
Well, the red and white goes along with the green and white very well.
Well, yeah, the one thing I can't do is become a Flyers fan. That will not happen. But it is tough not to like Gritty, who put on quite a display the other day.
Hey, what about that outdoor game they played at the link
in the rain?
It
was a mess.
No less. It's funny because my buddy Will, he says, you know, of course, Will, he says, how come everybody's so hard on, this is before the Eagles won the Super Bowl, everyone's so hard on the Eagles, everyone's so hard on the Phillies. The Flyers haven't won since 74 or 70, yeah, 75. He said, nobody says a word about that.
That's a good point, actually. And in fact, that came at the expense of my Sabres, as it happens.
Right? Broad Street Bullies.
Yeah. That was 75, I think.
74 was they beat the Bruins.
And then in 75, I want to say that they beat the Sabres.
Did they win it in 75? I think they did. I think they
Yeah, sure they did. Of course they did. They beat the Sabres, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Oh, well, sorry.
Well, that. and you had I'm probably one of the few people in sports fandom that had to endure the Fog Bowl, the Eagles Bears, and the Fog. We had the game in the Fog, right? We had the Fog game. That was the Fog. The 75.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yes. Absolutely.
Yeah.
That was 75.
Yeah, I went in 74. I went to every home Flyers game that year when they won the Cup. Of course, I lived about four blocks from the stadium, so that made it easy.
Was there standing room? My father one year when the Rangers were terrible in the old Garden. My dad remembers going to every Ranger home game, and he basically there was standing room in the rafters. You could do that when I first got to Montreal. You could do that in the Forum.
Oh, sweet!
It was $10 standing room up in the rafters. It was awesome.
Well, I never had to stand up. I never was in the rafters. Here's what I used to do. Since I lived a couple blocks from the stadium, from Spectrum, actually, excuse me, I would walk down early, and I would stand outside and ask people for tickets.
Yep.
And they were sold out. Every game was sold out. So these were mostly season ticket holders, and maybe the other people couldn't make it, and they would hand me tickets. The first time it happened was one night I wanted to see the game, and my brother and his pals all went down. They said, just stand there and ask for tickets. They'll give them to you. And I did for every game. And then I would turn around, and I only needed one ticket. And, of course, I would turn around and sell the tickets.
Yep.
The other tickets that I'd been given.
It's funny. I used to do that when I was in Cincinnati. We'd go down to Riverfront and the Reds were bad at that time. I was at Proctor, and talking 83, 84. And I'd do something similar. And we ended up training. One time, there was a whole bunch of us went from P&G, and we didn't have tickets. And I said, give me a half an hour. And I parlayed a couple of free ones. I sold and then traded and sold and traded. And next thing you knew, we had like 8 tickets that we all sat, pretty close. But I used to do the same exact thing at Riverfront.
And what was fun about it is everyone else around there was doing. Of course, that game's totally changed now.
It's, yeah,
you know, you've got cell phones and you've got, but back then, it was all the guys I knew from the neighborhood were the other guys around. And so it was like, I mean, it was fun. We were, I was the oldest in the group. And so they were all, I was a senior in high school. Just running around having a good time. I remember one night, Bob Goldsworthy, Minnesota North Stars. I think that was his name, right?
Look at you, yeah.
He was like the star of the game. You know how they come out and they used to skate around? And then go back into the tunnel. They'd announce their name, and they'd come out, and they'd just do it once around, and then go back in the tunnel. Well, he looked up, and he saw my brother, and he handed his stick up. And it was clear he was aiming it to my brother. Well, a stick is not like a ball. I mean, when a stick goes up, there's like 12 hands on it. You know, everybody's got a piece of it. And there was this one, and all the guys that had their hands on it were guys from the neighborhood. And there was one kid in the middle who wasn't from the neighborhood, and he had his hands wrapped around the middle of the stick. And he looked to one side, and the guy on one side shook his head, and he looked to the other side, and I shook my head, and he just threw his hands up and walked away.
I love it.
My brother was out playing street hockey with that stick the next day.
Of course. Absolutely. I love it. Johnny, this is great.
We did everything but talk about racing.
Exactly. Well, we got some racing in the middle.
It was a quiet weekend.
It was. But that'll end. With this weekend coming. We don't have to even wait until the weekend with that race at San Diego.
My column last week was because my wife had asked me last weekend. She said, "Honey, are there any big races this weekend?" I said, "You don't have to ask me that question again until the second week of November.
Well, we're going to see you. I'll see you before I talk to you, right? We're going to see you Saturday.
That's a rumor.
I will confirm it. We are headed down to Philly with now another one of these family traditions that has grown out of nothing. The flower show and the Valley Forge sports memorabilia show. So we're headed down to Philly this weekend.
Yeah, you really don't like your home, do you?
I've been trying to convince. I take Tina to all these places, and I say, you know, we could live here, and she agreed about New Orleans and Savannah off of the past week. So, but we're still here. It doesn't seem like we're going anywhere.
No, it's a good base of opera. What was Al Swearingen's line? A saloon is a great base of operations.
There you go.
It was spiced up a little better than that.
Yes. All right, Woo.
A saloon is a base of operation.
Go tend to your pigs. I love it. Johnny D, everybody. And we'll take the top of the hour break. We got John White coming up and Blaine Wright. Blaine Wright might join us if we can slip him in a little bit. Back after this.
The latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's going on? Mikey here, and I'm going to tell you about an offer from my good friends at ExpressBet. Let's be honest. We know you love playing the races, but you can't always make it to the track. Sometimes life just gets in the way of a good bet. Well, what if I told you about a place where you never miss a bet and you start with house money? You'd say I'm crazy, right? Well, not at ExpressBet. Your first $100 are on them. That's right. Sign up with ExpressBet.com using promo code XBRadio, bet $100, and they'll deposit $100 back into your account the very next day. Hey, plus you could get an extra $25 if you use ExpressFund Direct Deposit. You see what I mean? House money for betting the races. It's that easy. Check it out at ExpressBet.com to learn more. And don't forget to sign up for promo code XBRadio. You're gonna love it. And that's a Mikey guarantee. Must be 18 years or older and 21 years old in certain states to open an account with ExpressBet and reside in a state where such activity is legal. Void or prohibited. National Gambling Support Line 800-522-4700.
There's more good news about Pennsylvania's breeding program. Last year, the number of state-bred live foals rose by nearly 30%. Many other states saw a drop of between 10 and 20%. This says that Pennsylvania truly has North America's fastest-growing and most lucrative breeding program. And unlike some other states, our Racehorse Development Fund can only be used to support Pennsylvania breeding and racing. This is Brian Sanfratello. Please visit us at pabred.com.
Why is accreditation important in aftercare? The Thoroughbred Aftercare Alliance's standard of accreditation and grant process provide donors with confidence that their contributions are allocated in the most effective manner. TAA accreditation is only awarded after a complete review of an organization. Aftercare cannot be an afterthought for the industry. To learn more or support the TAA's mission, visit thoroughbredaftercare.org.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence for more than 25 years of equine business education. Classes are taught by industry experts in state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.